mean, you just, yeah, there's nobody else around. Just us. All staring at our phones.
I'm ready.
Commissioner.
Oh, Commissioner, yeah.
Be a lot of that going on in America the next 2 months.
I'm kidding. I said yesterday my screen time is going to be way up.
How about that?
All right.
Also
my TikTok usage.
Do I have to pay to be a part of this podcast with the famous Rick Hummel? TikTok famous Rick Hummel?
TikTok famous Rick Hummel.
Talk to my agent here.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined by, what do we call it, the A-team? Is that, there are four of us? So that works, right?
That works.
Okay, the A-team?
Oh, I was going to say...
Beatles. We're on the baseball beat.
The Stuck in Florida team? That doesn't have
Stuck
the,
in Florida.
Quite the ring to it.
I like A-team.
You like A-team?
Yeah.
Okay. I like the baseball Beatles. I kind of like that.
Okay.
Which one would you be? Ringo?
Sure,
sure. That's my show. All right. I'm joined by Hall of Fame baseball writer Rick Hummel, whose voice you heard. St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Ben Fredrickson, whose voice you heard. And MLB.com Cardinals beat writer Annie Rogers, whose voice you will now hear.
Hello.
Okay. We are here. Camp is closed officially. There are no formal workouts. There are no mandatory workouts. Some players did hit today. Some players did catch today. Some players did baseball. But sports all around us have shut down almost entirely because of the spread of the coronavirus and not wanting to contribute to, you know, it's cutting a swath through our culture. What do we do? Anyone?
You pray that everybody can be smart, be safe. We just have to ride this out. I mean, I know the entertainment value of sports is enormous, and people, I think people would have watched games in empty stadia, but that's not really the way to do it now either, you know. So we have to go back to the pioneer. You know, you watch these old Westerns. What did the people do when they had the fireplace and they had like three books and no radio, no... You know, no movies, no nothing. What did they do at night for 4 or 5 hours before they went to bed?
They told stories. So is that what we do? I mean, is that maybe that's our role as sports writers now, to sit around the campfire, as it were, the quarantine campfire, and tell tales?
I don't know how those pioneers did it without the cell phones and the games to play on your phones. You know, how could they possibly have existed?
Well, the answer is make TikToks.
How did they do it without TikTok? I don't know, honestly. I mean, I'm going to watch so many TikToks over the next however many weeks. It's going to be – I don't know. I'm going to make TikToks, hopefully with you guys, over the next few weeks.
I'm retired from the TikTok game. I feel like I want to go out on top. But no,
I always think I should – I'm going to do more TikToks than I ever watch, and so I'm now 1-0, so I'm good.
I think the role, like, of our job is, like, we're not going to figure out the cure for coronavirus, but I do think it's a public health crisis, and we cover a massive part of our society that people have a lot of interest in. They care about the teams we cover and how these teams and leagues navigate this nebulous time is news. It matters. It's important. What are the players doing? Obviously, this is going to affect players. It's just a matter of time until we start seeing more names that we know that are affected by this. I mean, that's news. It's not – the games don't end and the sports writers don't say, okay, news team, come in and handle this. No, it's our job to figure out what's going to happen. How are they going to sort through this? Yeah, there aren't games, but there are fascinating stories to be written in the coverage of this and how sports kind of fits into it.
And I think there probably is a blend of that where you cover the news, which we've had a lot of over the past week. You know, I mean, I just think things happened at such a warp speed. You guys think about it. We had, you know, what was it? Thursday of last week, we hear how we have to wash our hands and the signs go up. Saturday, they meet with the players and say, hey, look, pre-autograph balls, try to end the hand-to-hand contact with fans, be aware and everything like that. Monday evening, they decide to close the clubhouse to the media and non-essential personnel for the first time Tuesday. Wednesday, there are teams discussing about opening the season not at their home ballparks or with empty ballparks. Thursday, they cancel spring training. So this is all in a 7-day span. Cancel spring training, push back opening day 2 weeks. Friday, close spring training camps and send players home or allow them to go home. I mean, that's an 8-day span that we just had our, you know, had the sport radically, upended. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Like, and we don't know what the next few days hold. I mean, we can't plan week by week or month by month. We have to plan day by day. And like John Mozeliak said yesterday, they have to plan hour by hour. I mean, it's wild. It's really crazy to be a part of it.
As the news fades, do you think, Annie, we start doing like some like alternative programming, like some feature stories so that people can, if they want, a distraction from it? Is that sort of what direction we go with this?
I don't know. I mean, we're going to have to figure out a way to continue to cover the news and tell the stories, but also like people need to be entertained. And they turn to sports to do that a lot of times, and now there's no sports to watch. So, you know, hopefully they continue to read about sports, because I know there's a lot of people still covering the teams that they cover and do all that. But yeah, we're gonna have to create some, you know, content over the next however many weeks, months, until there's baseball game again.
Rick, where do you think this leaves the Cardinals? You know, they'd lost once since Mike Schilt got married, I believe, right? Going into, you know, and they even played a game right as the cancellation was happening, which was a whole curious thing, and we can talk about that. But where, like, as far as baseball goes, where were the Cardinals when the season stopped or spring stopped?
Well, I think their strengths were as they envisioned. The starting pitching was really good. Bullpen was really good. Defense was really good. And the weaknesses, unfortunately, were also about, they were, I mean, the top four in the lineup, Wong, Carpenter, Goldschmidt, DeYoung, you felt pretty good about. Bottom four, you didn't feel good about them at all. That's just right where they were. I mean, basically, when they started camp, except for DeYoung's great camp. Wong was coming on like this at the end of last season. DeYoung was not. Yeah. So that's been the big story offensively. But then those outfielders are striking out in an incredible pace.
Did Paul DeYoung win the Grapefruit League batting title? Do we have an official ruling on that? Did he finish 500?
No, I think he was 464.
Oh, one hit shy.
Yeah, he had almost 1,000 OPS, I think. Slugging. OPS was like 1,500 and something, I think. But so I don't know. I mean, he would have won a TV set in the old days. That was the veterans always told the rookies that they're in the Grapefruit League that they were playing for TV sets. That the winning Grapefruit League team would get TV sets. So these rookies would be going crazy down there. And at the end, there were no TV sets, of course.
Did you remember that one time Matt Holliday bought TV? He was so frustrated. He went and bought TVs. I think
he bought two. Yeah,
bought two. Are those still the TVs in there? We weren't allowed in the clubhouse there for a while.
The original TVs. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the Matt Holliday TVs.
Updated, sort of, I guess. But,
yeah. It would be a bad year to win the TV, considering there's nothing to watch.
Yeah.
Netflix, I guess.
You know, the next shoe to drop. People are, sports fans are still holding out hope that there'll be some football activities in the NFL. There's not going to be, but mini camps are starting pretty soon, and the draft is before that. That ain't going to happen. Those are not going to happen on their proper days here.
Well, we were just talking before we started the podcast, like, Commissioner, what do you think about the start of baseball? I mean, 2 weeks seems rather optimistic the more we
not
find out about this. I think, like, does anybody have a guess on when we're actually starting this camp two of sorts, which is what John Mozeliak is saying? I mean, I don't think anybody here has a sense that they're going to be starting the opening day games 2 weeks after they initially hoped.
Yeah. My bet, the more we like learn about this and get clarity on it, is I mean, we're pushing end of May, June. Honestly, how the situation has evolved over, you know, the last few days.
The season is going to start at a holiday. You hope it's not Labor Day. Memorial Day is the first holiday, I think it was. That's, people are going to go to the ballpark Memorial Day weekend, wherever they are. July 4th is a good time to start. Attendance will be high then. Labor Day, too late.
Wait, really? You think what? You'll think they'll tie it to a holiday?
If it's close enough, they will. I mean, why not? Why, if you can start on a holiday, why would you start a couple days earlier than a holiday.
Just because they want to play 162 and they're going to try to cram as much in. It's not going to happen, but...
You're trying to get the Players Association to be playing day nine doubleheaders galore.
No, that's what I'm saying. But every conversation they're having is how do we preserve the 162? And one of the reasons why is because they don't want to fight over salaries. You know, the moment you reduce it from 162, and the language was right there in the press releases where they talked about national emergency. That's the phrase in the CBA where they can then reduce salaries. They can reduce player salaries. And so you want to have that argument? That's tough.
They'll be playing in November then.
Yeah.
Get used to it. Yeah. I mean,
it would be a bad hill for ownership to die on considering where this is in terms of the CBA. This would be a time for both sides, union and owners, to say, hey, this is obviously a curveball that no one saw coming. Let's give a little on each side and try to stay on each other's good sides, because if this becomes cantankerous over the season, over salary, over you know, some dollars here and there, and then they take that negative energy into negotiating the next CBA, it's going to be war.
This has so many ripple effects. If you play 162 games and go into November, December, what does that mean for the next season?
Right.
And the next season, What does this mean? I mean, all of the different, you know, deadlines, viewpoints throughout the entire season, trade deadline, what does this mean for rosters? What does it mean for option years? Like, there's so many things that they have to kind of sort through. And, I mean, you're right, Ben. Like,
what does it mean for the draft? You can't scout.
Exactly. I mean, they have to kind of band together on this.
I hope.
You hope.
It could be a really good thing. And I don't mean to say it like that, so let me rephrase that. Obviously, the national pandemic could not be a good thing. I didn't mean to phrase it like that. But this time of uncertainty could bring owners and players closer together, or it could drive them further apart. I really think this will be an important chapter when it comes to what baseball looks like beyond that next CBA.
The owners and players have reached agreement on so many things in the last week.
Right.
Good that point. They couldn't have agreed on in like 10 or 12 years before.
Yeah. It's very true. Yeah. I totally expect the DH to be. With the way things are going, we'll have the DH. I don't know. The playing in warm other places to close. You know, you mentioned that, what does it do for the next season if baseball goes for a while? One thing, as odd as it sounds, the calendar does work to their benefit. This season was going to be the earliest that it could start. And that means next season would have been 6 days, 7 days later. So, I mean, it's a week when they're playing a month. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, you're looking at a bunch of different ramifications. You know, the draft was supposed to be in Omaha this year. That won't happen. There's no College World Series for the draft to be there. Field of Dreams was supposed to hold a game this year. That stadium was supposed to be – a new stadium was supposed to be there. It's being built, yeah.
I don't know what they're doing right now with it, but – I know that they had started construction.
We've seen photos. And so what happens to that? You know, does that just get kicked to 2021? Cardinals are supposed to go to London and to play the Cubs, and the Cardinals still want to do that. But, you know, it's hard to envision how that's going to happen. So does that get kicked to 2021? You know, how do all these things, you know, I mean, what obligations are kept? What are postponed to 2021, and what does that mean for a schedule in 2021? I mean, it's very fascinating. Do they pick up the schedule on that? Like, say Flag Day is the day, or July 4th is the day. Does everybody just start that day? What happens to the All-Star game then? You play a week, and then there's an All-Star game? And the All-Star game was supposed to be at Dodger Stadium this year. You know, a grand celebration. So what happens to that? I mean, you're right. We could pull this thread for days as to what direction things go. Let me first tell everybody about our sponsor. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design specializes in custom closets, pantries, laundry rooms, garages, and more. Now get 40% off plus an additional 15% off. Closets by Design, 314-733-9855. That's Closets by Design, the official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball.
Well, in 1981, when the players went on strike in June and resumed in August, the first game played was the All-Star game. They played the All-Star game in Cleveland. It's either Friday or Saturday night. I think it was Saturday night. Maybe even Sunday night. It was Sunday night. That's when it was, I guess. And that was because they had missed it in July. But they chose teams. You know, once they figured they were going to come back, I think they used the balloting that had been done before. I'm not sure if it was fans and players in or just fans or whatever, but they played it, and that was the kickoff to the season, which was kind of cool, actually. It was a very good game, too. Mm-hmm. And so I can see that theoretically happening if this season was that long. But then you'd already played 60 games by that point, though. They played zero games now, yeah. If you're starting then.
Yeah, I don't
think you could have anything less than half a season of games. Even 100 games might be weird. I mean, the records are going to be – there's no way they can play 162 games and not have them frozen out in November. You can't play everybody in warm weather games.
Well, I know. Yeah.
I mean, somebody's going to have to be home.
Wait, so, well, you would count up the roof stadiums and the warm weather stadiums.
Yeah, but then that means that those teams have to be on the road an awful lot in the heat of the battle in the season.
That's true.
They could be dead and buried because they had to play so many road games.
Yeah.
I wondered, and this is just as everybody is spitballing, like I wondered if they get to the point where they feel like they need to start, but they, you know, have maybe the pandemic has stemmed, but it's not quite to the point where they feel like they can have games in front of fans. I just wondered if there was a way to – all these teams are going to be doing this second camp in their spring training locations, it sounds like. Why not play the teams that are in your states? There's two states, Florida, Arizona, with already stadiums already set up. Don't allow fans. Play the games. Count them as regular games and put them on TV. I mean, TV games will be well received whether there are people in the stands or not. Play the schedule that you can in your state. Travel only with teams, no fans, and that could help you get games started. Now, I don't know what that looks like, if that's even being considered a possibility. Then reverse engineer the schedule so you're playing the teams on the other side when you're able to travel again. I mean, they're probably considering all options, but getting to 162, I don't know how that's going to happen.
It would be difficult somewhat for the Cardinals. I mean, they'd have to completely modify the schedule. You'd have to abandon the American League National League and go with Grapefruit League and Cactus League. That would be something, right?
What would you do with the DH then?
It would be universal.
As it should be.
Oh, you can go in the corner.
You're
on podcast timeout, Ben Fredrickson.
It's a matter of time. I'll be right eventually. It'll come to me.
You will be. But that'd be kind of, I don't know, it'd be kind of fun. The Cactus League pennant winner against the Grapefruit League pennant winner for the World Series, Rick. You've seen crazier things. No, probably not.
You could take a 3-week trip to Arizona because most of your division is in Arizona except for the Pirates.
I was going to say it would be odd for the Cardinals because they could plant in Scottsdale, and play a whole bunch of games against division foes.
Or they could even, if the Diamondbacks would happen to be on town somewhere, just play a whole bunch of games in their ballpark,
Right.
And know they're going to get played and know you're going to have decent crowds. I mean, the Cub fans will still be there from spring training.
And they live there.
They would have been quarantined for all that time.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know the Pirates were planning on playing any baseball this year.
No, that's why it works out.
Nobody's going to watch them play anywhere. Bradenton, Pittsburgh, nowhere. Nobody wants to watch the Pirates. They just put them on the Arizona trip.
The Pirates were actually working on crowd control long before this ever started.
If the Cardinals were to go to Arizona to play the Cubs, would that be the first Cubs-Cardinals interleague series then? Because it would be Cactus and Grapefruit League?
I guess so, yeah. And the Reds, too, for that matter. So they've always played the Reds in the National League.
Yeah.
I think that this is not going to be anything that – I can't see a schedule maker coming up with something that's going to be fair to every team, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, everyone – someone is going to be mad about something. But at a time like this, what else can you do?
I think that the other interesting thing, too, is I'm going to try to write about this a little bit, but there will be teams that get better during this time and teams that get worse based off of a lot of things, health, but also how they structure this, how they plan it. There will be teams that are not as prepared whenever this modified, weird, warped season starts, better prepared than others. I think that's the thing. If you're Mike Schilt, talking to him today, he's like, he finally feels like he can lock in on something, I think. He doesn't know when it will start. He doesn't know when it will end. He doesn't know. But he knows, I can do something today that makes us better prepared than maybe another team when we resume. And that's what the players are going to have to lock in on, what they can control.
Yeah, it's all really going to be about the structure, the template of the workouts. I mean, Schilt talked a little bit about how they're individualized. That's going to be huge for especially young players. It's really going to come down to how you can take advantage of this time.
It's going to be interesting for pitching. I agree. I get exactly what you're saying. What team can find strike the right balance of not keeping guys over RPM'd, mm-hmm. you know, so that they're exhausted, but not completely shut down so that, that they have to start from scratch, but also engage so it doesn't become boring with Groundhog Day. And I think, you know, the big part about it will be pitching. Like, where do they go with pitching? Especially, as Rick said, you know, the Cardinals had such superb pitching this spring, and that is the tentpole of their contention, is how strong their pitching is. You know, they had Wainwright, Flaherty, Hudson, these guys all up to 75 pitches, 80 pitches, and now they're going to scale them back to 45. Rick, do you, is there a compare, like the strike coming back in 95? What was the situation for pitchers there? And I remember watching, you know, it seemed like there was conditioning on the job in some cases as that season started. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, because at 95, you didn't have all these great complexes that you have now, where there are six practice fields everywhere. The Cardinals weren't even over in here yet. They were still in St. Petersburg. And they had a modest complex in the northeast part of town where they played and the, you know, warmed up, and then they had 1.5 fields at their own ballpark. So they got, there was no way, and plus players didn't, they didn't have the conditioning facilities at home where they live to stay in shape all that time. They came in fat, slow, sore-armed, and the spring training was not nearly long enough. They had like 9 or 10 days, although it was about 140 degrees every day, so that makes some stillness out of their, some soreness out of their arms. But now in 81, it was different, you know, because they had a strike during the season, and they only missed 2 months, so it didn't take them too long to ramp it up. They stopped playing in June. They started again in August.
Do you think that's, this is comparable to that? Did they get far enough in the spring?
I'm just saying that it didn't take them that long. This could be 2 months now, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it might be comparable, actually, although they will play zero games now and 60 games from before.
Well, they got 30 days into spring training. They got 1 full month into spring training. I guess that's the question, is at what point does that get you for baseball shape? I don't know.
I think if they would only be out a month, they'd be all right. If they're out 2 months, you're almost back to zero. You're maybe back to 15% or 20% of what you've done and learned before.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating question for the Cardinals, because if there's one team that can point to its pitching and say this is our pillar, it's our cornerstone, you know, this will be both probably in some ways an advantage but also a stress test, right? How can they modify this to have their best strength be sharp whenever it comes time to count?
Yeah, just the unknown is really what's, you know, wild, crazy here, because you don't know when they're going to start. You don't know how long it is from now. It's just such a strange, and there's just a lot of moving parts to try to figure out the best way to go about it. And I don't know if there is a good best way to go about it. I don't know. You know, there's not one right way maybe to attack this.
When the other sports were canceling, NBA cancels, announces that one of their players had tested positive for coronavirus, and then another second one does. The NHL suspends play. MLS suspends play. The NCAA tournament first announces that they're going to play without fans. Then teams start peeling out, and they cancel the whole March Madness, something near and dear to the commission's heart. We were all at a baseball game the next day with 6,000 people while owners and Major League Baseball were discussing ending spring and delaying the season. While that conversation was on the table, we were with a large crowd that the other sports has said we don't want to gather. How did you feel, Rick, at that moment? I mean, we all knew somewhat what was coming. We all felt it was inevitable, and we're watching a game that Matt Carpenter said was the most meaningless game in the history of the sport. How did you feel watching that?
Well, I got scared for a second, because the last time I didn't see a team warming up a half hour before the game was when Darryl Kyle died in Chicago in 2002. You know, we were sitting in the press box, you're watching, and there's nobody warming up for either team. 1:15 game, but whatever they played, 1:20, nobody's there at 12:45, 5:01, 1:00. Really? Well, we know what happened. And now I was thinking nobody had died here, but I thought there's something really serious. They're surely talking to the players about what's going on. Do you play? Do you don't play? So that's I figured that was the crux of was the issue there. And they're ultimately were going to come out and play, or at 105 they weren't going to come out at all, and then the thing was wiped out.
I couldn't believe they started six and played six games in Florida before making the announcement and finally pulling, tabling the night games and not playing the games in Arizona. Everybody who is around baseball woke up that morning and knew that there was going to be an announcement about the future of this. No one knew what it was at that time, but everybody knew it was going to be a decision that probably stopped or severely altered Grapefruit League games. Why Major League Baseball didn't say, hey, first thing in the morning, we're going to not do anything until we decide what we're doing moving forward, I don't know. And they don't have a good answer for that. And people say, well, what's the big deal? And it might not be. You know, so far, there's been no proof that that caused any damage. But when you read more about the way the coronavirus spreads and the crowds that had happened, I don't know how baseball allowed the Florida governor to say, hey, at 11 a.m. in a conference in Tampa, said, hey, please don't gather crowds more than 250 people. And if you do, then please have testing stations set up where you can take people's temperatures and make sure you're not spreading this thing. And baseball said, okay, we hear you. Hours later, we're going to play six games in the Grapefruit League game that don't count. Exhibition games, while all the other leagues have canceled, you know, or suspended games that mattered, games that were for postseason play. And baseball said, no, we'll go ahead with these six exhibitions, you know, hours after the Florida governor tried to put a cap on crowds. It I don't understand it, and especially as these cases climb in Florida, I don't know if one is traced back to one of those games, and I think baseball's bad decision is going to look worse. I thought that was a big mistake, and I get it. It's not perfect. No one's response has been perfect. We're all learning about this as it gets bigger, but why was baseball one of the last ones to take action, meaningful action, not talking about keeping 12 reporters out of a clubhouse, meaningful action when all these other leagues were stopping games that actually counted? I don't understand that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I felt weird sitting up there. Like, what am I doing? Why am... I mean, we hadn't gotten really... We didn't know... We thought we were going to be writing about, you know, the suspension or the cancellation of spring training, the delay of the season, but, like, we didn't know. So we're sitting in the press box, like, trying to figure all that out, and, like Kamish said, just watching no one on the field, like, what is going on? And it just felt so... It felt eerie. It felt weird, you know, and like Ben said, I mean, that the game didn't matter. It was an exhibition game. That was kind of the weirdest part for me, was we're covering a game that doesn't matter while they're figuring out how to cancel spring training. It was just such a strange feeling, and I honestly had to try to keep my head on straight, because I'm also thinking about, like, the whole crowd and how it's affecting us. And, you know, you try to think, we have a job to do, but you also have to think about our lives and the people that, you know, we love, our families, are all back, you know, in St. Louis. And so, yeah, it was a really crazy day. It's been a crazy few days.
On top of that, not only a game with 6,000 people in the stadium and the number of games, but that was also the day that they were doing minor league, you know, physicals. Yeah. So all of a sudden you had 200 more people stuffed into a facility, and they were all going through physicals, and they were all going through that contact, and they were all being quizzed on where they'd traveled, where they'd come from, if they had any symptoms. I mean, you had, like you said, the governor of Florida said, please don't gather in groups of more than 250. And the Cardinals at the same time were like, hey, look who's come in, 200 new players into a building who had all just flown in or driven in or just got here. I mean, it just was a very awkward optic, and it set off a lot of probably red alarms as to what was going on. But you at the same time, you go, like, were the Cardinals landlocked because they're one of 30 clubs? They got to go through business as usual to the best of their ability, or could they have said, look, this doesn't feel right. We're not, I never got a straight answer on that. I asked, like, could you guys have stopped and stood up and said, this doesn't feel right? Or did everything have to be in concert? Everything have to be agreed upon?
Well, it wasn't just the Cardinals going business as usual until Rob Manfred released his statement. More than 35,000 people in Florida that day were at a baseball game across six games. Now, I think the business structure says the organization starts at the top. So to me, Manfred should have woken up that morning and said, hey, we're not doing anything until we make an announcement. Mm-hmm. He didn't, and there were no owners who grabbed him by the shirt collar and said, "This is crazy. Don't do this." And you know, granted, it takes a lot of coordination to get everybody on the same page, and a lot of people have to sign off on something. I just thought it could have been done faster that morning. But you know, since then, the Cardinals have, you know, I got the sense the Cardinals felt like they wished it would have happened sooner.
Players did. Oh, yeah.
Well, Cardinals decision makers.
Oh, yeah. Sooner. Absolutely. That, yeah, Moe Zalok did not hide that.
They're not going to come out and say, hey, the league screwed this up.
Yeah.
But you get the sense that they wished it would have moved more quickly than it did once it became clear that pro teams were setting things on the table. But ever since then, we've seen it happen pretty quickly. I mean, those minor leaguers you mentioned, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all shipped out, and now they're at a capacity with the stadium where they can have everybody there that they need to, and they've clearly, you know, had their plan in place once they got the green light from the league. That I think we probably mostly all agreed that green light from the league should have came sooner.
I guess the logistics of that day were that Manfred and Tony Clark were meeting in Arizona.
Yeah,
which would be. I mean, the Florida games were about ready. They had not reached an agreement until after the Florida games had started. Now, they could have stopped the games at that point. So, okay, we're done. You know, they could have released it at 3 o'clock Eastern time and said, okay, these games are over right now. Get
right
out of here. Yeah.
But that was the owners had control of the games.
Yeah.
It's the players and that meeting that you're talking about had the camp.
Florida, you know, ahead of the Florida games and the Arizona games, we probably wouldn't have had that situation.
Yeah.
Part of this is, too, though, is the bigger discussion. Like, sports has to grind to a halt, not just baseball. But we are told, covering sports, that there's always a game the next day. The guys playing sports are told you play every inning, you play every day. I mean, sports has a blue collar, one foot in front of the other. We play on holidays, we play on weekends. We play after national tragedies. We're part of the distraction and the entertainment for our country when there are bad things going on. And this has been wild to watch sports realize, okay, that we're not a distraction. We, if you actually look at what crowds are doing to this thing, we're part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And it's not, it became, we've watched all these leagues shift from worrying about their players, which is completely understandable, as we all should be worried about the people that we work with, to worrying about their effect on this pandemic. With the crowds,
right.
And the crowds are the problem. And finally, not just sports, but everything that gets a bunch of people together has gone, oh, wait, we're not just worried about our people, we're worried about people. And that's been a fascinating thing to watch that kind of overpower sports. And I'll give a lot of credit to Adam Silver. Now, he was acting with a player who had been tested positive, which makes things totally different. But Adam Silver, his decision to suspend the NBA was the thing that changed it. I think there were two things. It was Rudy Gobert testing positive, and the players went, oh, God, this can affect me. Not that maybe they will be, you know, unable to combat the illness, but that it can affect their family. It made it real to the players when Rudy Gobert was tested positive. And Adam Silver's decision to put everything on ice made every owner go, oh, that's what we should be doing. So I think those two guys, now obviously Rudy Gobert didn't choose to get it, and he probably should have handled his situation better with the whole interaction with the reporters, which was made in good nature but looks bad now. But Silver's action, I think, set the tone for how sports was going to respond.
Yeah, I mean, and Colton Wong, when he was talking to us the other day, said that too. It's like, he doesn't want to stop, but and the players don't want to stop right now, but they have to realize that this can affect them, and it can affect the people that they love. And that was kind of the realization that happened when the NBA suspended its, you know, the league was like, wow, it's not just something we're reading about on the news. It's not just something we're watching, you know, on the news. It's real, and it's happening to all of us, and we have to do something about it.
So how are you going to spend your time? Like, do you have any tips, Rick, for what life will be like without baseball? This will be the longest you've gone. This your 43rd spring training, and this will be the longest you've gone in April without seeing a baseball game in what you can remember of your life, right?
Yeah, even in 95, they had replacement players in place to start the regular season. The teams were flying home with these guys. Yeah, there were guys who had played ball in college or some low minor leaguers, and maybe some guys had actually been in the big leagues a little bit.
Any baseball writers jump the fence?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But baseball writers were confused. You know, you watch these guys play for about a month, you think, there's not so much difference. And one of the coaches told me, hey, look, buddy. He said, you just listen to the sound of the ball coming off the bat when the big boys come back, and then tell me you think how much difference there is. And he was exactly right. You know, you hear, I didn't reckon with the fact that when the replacement players were here, there were almost no home runs hit in spring training. It was like the College World Series used to be, you know.
That's a good reference.
They were like, each team maybe had a guy who had two home runs, and that for 30 games.
So they were all the Cardinals?
Yeah, right. Al Lang Stadium, but I think there were no home runs up there. But anyway, it was different. I convinced myself that this ball isn't going to be so bad. It would have been awful if he'd taken that north and showed that to the fans back there thinking, what? We saw this down at Heinie Meinie Field last week. You know?
So how are you going to – what are you going to do with your – how are you going to get a baseball fix in this time?
Well, there's television, there's streaming television, there's books, there's more television.
Will you read a baseball book?
Probably. I've fallen behind a little bit by about 5 or 6 years on my reading, so there's plenty of time to catch up here now.
Evidently, yeah. Yes. What about you, Ben?
What's that term that you had the other day where you like collect books but don't really have time to read them?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't think of the... All the stacks of books, yeah, the feng shui of stacking books.
Maybe I can put a dent in those, except all my books are back in St. Louis, so maybe I can get a shipment of books here.
I have a stack of books, you know, at the condo. You can just borrow.
You'll be back here soon enough.
I think it's an opportunity for us to maybe take a swing at stuff that we've wanted to try to write but haven't had time. Like Derek and I were talking about that.
That novel we want
to
write?
Yeah, no, I can barely write a column. I don't think I need to try to go longer than that. But maybe an interview that you might be able to chase down. I mean, there's all kinds of stories that throughout the grind of covering games, taking trips, you go, man, I wish I just had time to work on that. Well, if everything stops for a significant period of time, then you don't really have an excuse not to try to chip away on something that you've been wanting to work on is kind of how I feel about it.
Sundoku. That's the word for stacking books. I'm going to someday write a book that joins a stack. Of unread books for somebody else. That's going to be my contribution. Cool. I'll write a book that does it. Annie?
What am I going to do? I'm going to watch TikTok, of course. No, I'm just kidding. Well,
how many views do you think Rick's video has by now?
I mean, I could probably check.
It's probably gotten 25,000 by the time we started the podcast. 25,000 more.
Let me check in real time here.
This is podcast magic. While she looks, Ben will explain what happened. It was his idea.
Well, I TikTok is this thing that I don't know much about, but
you eat it when you have bad breath, don't you?
What are you trying to say, Commish? I wonder why he wouldn't say. He kept inching away from me during the podcast.
6 feet.
Yeah, no kidding. So I just figured, hey, what the heck? We should do a baseball writer's TikTok and have Commish be in it because he has this cult-like following. People that just love him. Every time he makes an appearance on social media, you know, his Twitter following, you know, is very passionate. It's like, you know, they only get pretty one tweet every couple weeks, if
years.
That. Yeah, years. I was trying to be generous. I said, let's get Commish in there. And Annie set it up because she's awesome and knows technology better than all of us. And Commish killed it. He crushed the dance. I don't know what the dance is called, but we learned it. And Commish just, he was the Hall of Fame closer.
So it's called Something New is the dance. It now on Twitter, it has 92,000 views. And my tweet has 129 retweets and 1,272 likes. So.
Commish, what happens when there's no baseball, you know? Nothing to watch.
Commish, how do you feel about the fact that we will be down here for months and not one thing that we produce, written, podcast, anything, will get as much attention as that video that we did this morning?
That is a daunting thought, isn't it?
Oh, man, yeah. I will be watching a little bit of TikTok, but reading and, you know, hopefully writing, not just work-wise, but I like to write in general and... watching Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff.
I just like to use this opportunity to say that if you want Commish to appear in your TikTok video for an appearance fee, we will take donations to the BBWAA dinner. Right, Commish?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's great, yeah. We'll set it up. GoFundMe.
All of a sudden, the Hummel intern that we have every summer is just going to be a TikTok producer. The sole purpose of the Hummel intern will be like, okay, you're now Hummel's social media guy. You have to run his Instagram, his TikTok, his Snapchat. He has a Facebook page, but he doesn't really go there much.
Much.
Can you imagine if we did that?
I mean, we can reach a lot of a lot of people on TikTok, so it's a way to maybe boost our brand. I don't know.
But why? Why?
Oh, we don't have time for this.
I don't know.
We don't have time for explaining TikTok.
We could, I mean, okay.
Really, to be honest, like I asked that question, like, how are you going to satisfy your baseball itch? And I thought, oh, well, I'll play like, you know, Stratomatic. No, I'll play Ethan Allen. And you guys are just, I'm so old. Like, I just was thinking, like, watch old games.
I will probably be watching some YouTube highlights of baseball games. That'll definitely have to happen. I'll have to create a list or something of like really awesome games from our lifetimes.
I want to read an article from Kamish about the games that we should all go back and watch.
Well, yeah. Oh, that'd be good. I was thinking that we should pull up some games like from the 40s or 30s and cover them like we do now. Like, hey, we're going to do the Gas House Gang of 34. And, you know, we would do it where we're at the press box and we would live tweet it. Rick could blog the heck out of it. And then we'd come up with a cider and a game story and a column from it. I think that'd be kind of fun. Be a good challenge.
You need that 6-foot rule because those wool uniforms stunk in hot weather.
Oh. the challenge would be to write it in the flowery prose of the time, right? Could we just like slap purple prose all over the place? You could use SWAT Smiths. Oh, I got it wrong. You could use SWAT Smiths and get away with it. It's your dream in a headline.
Flyhawks.
Cardinals SWAT Smiths down baby bears.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, great. I'll just go back and write hot takes based off of all the information I had at the time. Like, I don't know about moving this Wainwright kid from closer. Might want to hold on to what you have.
Wait. I mentioned the 30s and the 40s, and Ben just goes, 2006, man. That was a long time ago.
A long time ago. 2006, man. You want to know how old I was?
No.
Sure. Six. Nine. You know where Rick and I, you know where we were in 2006?
The stadium press box.
Yeah.
The Rick Hummel press box.
96, 86, 76.
Yeah. But that is like, I mean, not to gas you up here, Kamish, you know, you've got to keep your ego in check. I'm kidding. But it is one of the cool things about working with you is like when something like this happens, I can turn to my right and go, Kamish, like, big picture perspective, where does this fit on the radar? And this has been something that talking to you, writing about this stuff in the past days, like you feel like you never want to write something that's like, okay, is this going to be looked back at as not a big deal or overdone? And hearing you today, like this is one of the most crazy things you've covered in your years of covering the game has been like, okay, it's put it into perspective for me because I don't have that track record. I haven't covered those games. I mean, you've seen a lot of stuff in baseball, and this is a significant historical significant moment for it.
Well, I've never seen the sports world grind to a halt. Even when President Kennedy was killed, they played NFL games 2 days after that.
On September 11th, what was it, a week?
They played without, well, 6 days, I think. Cardinals played on Monday, and the next game was on a Monday after that.
And there was still stuff to do. I was in Alaska with the Blues. That was my first week on the job at the Post-Dispatch. And
some week, huh?
Yeah. That's a whole other story. I'll tell you sometime, and you knock at the door and you open it up. And I've been watching the news because Ben will tell everybody like to sleep with the TV on, especially at hotels, like a low murmur, some white noise. So I had already woken up for
low
that.
Murmur.
Yeah, low murmur.
You can hear it from here. We're miles away from the condo.
Well, it's not. I have it up now to bring calmness. That's why I have it on. I need to hear it here.
I get it. The only word
is thunderous.
The more stressed you are, the louder the TV gets. That's
correct.
I get it.
It's totally correct. But so I had already woken up at the knock at the door, and there was Al McInnes to say, hey, you know, check the news. I have. Call your loved ones. Make sure your family's okay. And then we were all kind of in it together. We were you know, grounded and in Alaska trying to figure it out. Team, players, everybody. So it's interesting to see how, but there was still stuff to cover, and then there was practice. So maybe it's a little bit like this, where there'll be baseball activities. There won't be baseball games, and how each team handles that, and how each group of riders, you know, responds to that. And also, like, what sports pages do around the country, what The Athletic does. I mean, it's going to be a time where our creativity and our ability to report is tested. It's going to lead to fantastic coverage at a time when people could probably use the distraction.
Yeah, I think we have two roles, and one is to keep people, our readers and fans of the Cardinals, informed about what this means for the Cardinals, what this means for baseball. The other thing is it's okay to give people a distraction in a time when it's just they need a break from really important stuff, and it doesn't diminish what's happening in the world to say, hey, someday you just want to read about the way that a guy is pitching, and it's okay. I don't feel ashamed to have days where we go, okay, today we're going to write about baseball. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, you know, someone out there who's tired of watching the news and if it's just feeling overwhelmed by it, as we all have at different moments during this week, sometimes we just want to write about baseball. Sometimes people just want to read about baseball. So I think we can wear those hats and try to wear them well and try to, when the moment is appropriate, have some fun. I mean, we joke about that video, but I think it was well received, A, because Kamish is awesome. And our moves are pretty good, too. I mean, let's give ourselves some credit. But also because...
Particularly your time warp jump. I'm very impressed with that.
Very good.
Thank you. It was really good. I mean, like...
I was actually fishing for a compliment, so thank you.
It was on point. I mean, just really, like... just the timing of it, you had the... I mean, you could have been a diver.
Oh, thank you. That whole swimming thing might have gotten in the way. I'm not good at that. I can just enough to survive.
Divers only have to get in the water. Then somebody like a lifeguard jumps in and gets them. No.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, that's how it works.
I missed that part of the Olympics, which will probably be postponed. Wow, I'm sad trombone. It's okay to have – I think it was well received because it had levity, and it's like okay, it's okay to still smile, and I think that's part of our job too.
Yeah. We need to have a little fun as well. I mean, at the end of the day, we're covering baseball, whether baseball or not is played or not, but baseball's fun. Let's make this time, you know, as unknown and worrisome as maybe this is. Like, it's time to, you know, dig deep to find the stories that make baseball fun.
So we're going to end on a good note. What's your opening day memory? Do you have a favorite opening day memory?
Pete Vukovic, 1980, opening day against the world champion Pittsburgh Pirates, 1-0 game in the top of the ninth, bases loaded, nobody out, and the game ends 1-0. He strikes out Foley, Parker, and Stargell.
Wow.
To end the game.
That was at home or there?
At St. Louis.
Wow. What was the crowd like there?
I think they had around 40. They always had done well, but
like they didn't. Alive with, like, still feeling the vibes of the Clydesdales?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure they had the Clydesdales parading around in 1980. I don't think they did.
That's pretty good.
Annie, your opening day, do you have a favorite opening day memory?
I think more just the tradition of watching it with my family. You know, this is actually, it's kind of sad in a way, but this will be my first opening day covering baseball because last year I started in May. I think last year when I watched opening day, I was probably, I mean, it's the most recent memory I have, but it was also like kind of the biggest for me because I was watching it knowing, at that time I knew I was going to have this job. I was like, wow, next year I will be there and I'll be covering opening day. It's just such a big thing in my family. We love baseball. And to just watch opening day for us has always been like a really fun thing to do as a family. And then last year when I knew that I would be covering opening day, Cardinals opening day especially, their home opener, just that was a really cool feeling for me. Obviously, it'll be delayed a little bit, but I hope that we'll still have that feeling.
Ben, do you have one? Because, I mean, besides all the ones you've had with me.
Obviously, yes. The first opening day I covered back at the Post-Dispatch when I'd been hired back. I'd been an intern there and got to come back. And going up press box, seeing field, and knowing, like, okay, I get to do this as long as I'm here. And it's really the only job I ever wanted. Like, that's – growing up in Sedalia, man, like, that's – if I could have picked my dream job, that was it. And it's like, okay, as long as I don't screw this up too terribly, I get to see a bunch of these. And that was cool. I had one time where I met a woman. They had me do, like, the story – kind of like trying to explain opening day. Like you get that assigned that story sometimes, right? Where it's like, go find something interesting about opening day that's not hasn't been told. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a woman who was from overseas, and she just happened to be in town for a conference. So I found her kind of walking around Busch Stadium, and she just was walking around with this kind of like an awe of the pageantry and the moments in it. And I had a great interview with her because she had like she didn't know what was going on, and just explaining to her what was happening and her, getting her reactions to it, like. It was something I'll never forget because it's a reminder of like how special it is in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And this happens all over the country. It's special everywhere, but it's something very special in St. Louis. And that was I remember that every time it comes around because it's like it's a spectacle. And we cover it as such, and we should because it means a lot to a lot of people.
And when people come back from this, from the pause, from the hiatus, from the stoppage, whatever we want to call it, it's going to add not just pageantry and tradition to it. It's going to add emotion. I mean, the swell of a community reunited at a ball game, a society reunited at a ball game, it's going to be remarkable. It's going to be remarkable. My favorite opening day is being part of the 8227 at Mile High Stadium when Major League Baseball, for the first time, and I came to my backyard, came to my time zone, as people are probably tired of me saying, but it's true. You know, for it to be a 23-minute drive from my house and to see that, and then Eric Young steps up and hits a home run, it was like about damn time, and thank you. You know, it was so – and I got to share it with two people who mean the world to me. You know, my father, because I entered the lottery. My parents didn't. You know, I did. I entered the lottery for tickets. Waited by the phone to find out, waited for the envelope to come because you entered for the lottery for opening day in the first seven games of the season. And, you know, you send away a check to be part of that and you don't know what you're going to get. You could get five and they could be the last five. You could get five and they could be, you know, the middle five. You could get, you know, three and they'd be opening day and then two at the end. You didn't know. And I got, I would go to all seven and find a way to do that. But, I didn't know, and then we got the tickets, and I had gotten three tickets to opening day. And so I got to take my dad, which meant a lot to me, and then I got to take my dad's good friend, who would many, many years later be my son's godfather. My son's now late godfather. So just a meaningful day, one of my favorite. And so amazing to see a whole region swell with pride because baseball had come to them. And, you know, there'll be a little bit of that, too, for this opening day. Baseball will be back, and we'll bring people together.
About damn time, and thank you is what we'll be thinking, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. Thanks. We'll have a lot of time to talk, apparently, in the next few weeks.
And make TikToks.
We're tired.
Radio.
Going out on top.
All right. Thanks, everybody. You can find the best podcast in baseball and all of the podcasts produced by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch at stltoday.com and wherever you get your podcasts. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch and stltoday.com will continue covering baseball and bringing you sports coverage throughout this. There will be stories to tell, news to report, blogs to write, and chats to host. There will be a chat every week from the Cardinals as we try to sort through what delay means for individual players, what the delay means for the team, and what, of course, the delay means for the sport and the health of everybody involved. You can find all of that at stltoday.com and in the page of the Post-Dispatch. Best Podcast in Baseball is also available wherever you get your podcasts. We're available on iTunes, where you can listen to individual episodes. You can download individual episodes. You can subscribe. It's subscriptions that make a sponsorship like Closets by Design possible, and the sponsorships make the podcast possible as we go through this. You can also rate and review and tell us, you know, through the reviews what you'd like to hear, what you'd like to have us discuss, what you'd like to see more of, and what you'd like to see less of. I do read all those and try to pay attention. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you again by Closets by Design. Get organized with Closet by Design of St. Louis. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. And don't forget the 40% plus an additional 15% off. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BYDESIGN. Closets by Design, the official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball. Be back next week. Talk to you then. Stay healthy, everyone. What's the TikTok at now?
The TikTok.
What did I say?
TikTok.
What's the TikTok at?
It's at 101,000 views on Twitter.
That's too many.
It's so good. It's so good. Embrace it.